I'm Celia Donnet, historian, and this is the Romani Holocaust, an unfinished history, for the BBC World Service.
Before the war, there were settled in the Balkans from 3 to 4 million Roma. And of this number, no one can trace how many have survived. For, like the Jews, our race has been swept out of Europe by a nation of overlords who wanted to enslave all of the nations they could not eliminate.
As early as 1946, the French Romani writer Matteo Maximoff, who'd been incarcerated in a camp in France from 1940 to 1944, published a searing essay about the mass murder of Roma during the Nazi occupation of Europe.
What countless hundreds and thousands of them set forth, and how many were ever seen again? Not one. The Germans asserted that the Roma were barbarians, but is it not better to be barbarians than monsters? The Germans asserted that the Roma were thieves, but the accusers have themselves robbed the whole of Europe. The Germans asserted that the Roma were murderers, but they are the very men who ordained the horrors of Auschwitz, Buchenwald, Dachau and Ravensbrück.
Between 1933 and 1945, up to 500,000 people, labelled as gypsies, lost their lives as a result of racial policies enacted by Nazi Germany and its allies. The derogatory term gypsy was used to refer to a large and diverse minority who self-identified as Roma, Sinti, Manouche, Yenish, or as members of numerous other Romani communities across Europe. Many spoke dialects of Romanese, the Romani language. This Romani lament, Auschwitzate Hike Baro, has become one of the defining sung testimonies of the Romani Holocaust. It was composed by prisoners in the so-called Gypsy Camp in Auschwitz-Birkenau, where some 25,000 Roma and Sinti were imprisoned during the Second World War. Very few survived. On the night of 2nd of August 1944, the Auschwitz Gypsy Camp was, to use the Nazis' terminology, liquidated. Over 4,000 children, women and elderly people were killed in the gas chambers. The 2nd of August is now commemorated as Romani Holocaust Memorial Day. And yet, the genocide of Europe's Roma and Sinti in the mid-20th century is still much less known than the Jewish Holocaust. What's more, Roma across Europe still face widespread discrimination. This is the story of why the history of the Romani Holocaust has been so contested, and how Romani survivors, activists and historians have been fighting to tell their stories. Ari Juskovits is the author of Reign of Ash, a new history of the shared experiences and memories of Jews and Roma during and after the Holocaust.
It is a European-wide, multi-layered process where people are identified, robbed, deported, and eventually murdered in very large numbers.
Hermione Horvath, a Sinti woman from Austria, survived deportation to Auschwitz and Ravensbrück.
My parents had settled. My father was a plumber. We had a little house and a vineyard and a small area of woods. I and my five siblings never went hungry. But everything changed in the spring of 1939 when the German troops marched in. This was the start of a bad time for us. We had no rights in any aspect of our lives. We were outcasts. On the 22nd of June 1938, the Gestapo came to fetch my father to confirm his ID status, they said. Yet my father did not come back.
Josef Laubinger was deported to Dachau in 1939. After the war, his testimony was recorded by an organisation called the German Gypsy Interest Group, which was active in Munich in the spring of 1946.
I was transferred to the Auschwitz concentration camp. Here I met up with the rest of my family. My wife had lost all her relatives. They'd been gassed. After a short time together, we were separated. My wife was sent to Ravensbrück concentration camp, and I was transported to the Buchenwald concentration camp. One day, 40 Sinti and Roma were selected for transportation to Dachau. I was amongst the 40. We were to be sent to the different departments carrying out experiments. First off, I was sent to the seawater experiments. I was then sent to the malaria experiments.
Testimonies like these have been preserved in archives across Europe for decades, but it's only recently that historians have begun to recover them. German historian Carola Fings has been working with others to create the first online encyclopedia of the Romani Holocaust. She showed us a map that documents the places where Roma were persecuted. There are coloured dots all across the continent.
So you see the map of Europe, you see hundreds of spots. So I think that the maps will show that we have to change our view on the persecution. Quite often the awareness of this genocide is limited to Auschwitz. But, for example, we had more than 180 sites of murder in German-occupied Poland. So we will show that murder took place at a lot of places, not only inside the camps, but also outside of the camps.
The Holocaust initially and historically and rightly is defined by the mass murder of the Jews. The trajectory of anti-Semitism and mass murder as it applies to the Jews is the most distinct variant of this wider pattern that we see applied.
Eve Reisenhaft, University of Liverpool.
To the Roma, I think most of all among non-Jewish victims, but also to black people, to the disabled. So as we trace the genocide of the Roma back to a longer history of racialization and criminalization, we can also see the Holocaust as one consequence of processes that are at work.
The genocide of Roma and Sinti in Nazi Germany and elsewhere in Nazi-occupied Europe built on long-standing prejudices. Ari Joskowitz.
It comes in the form of romantic, and it comes in the form of threat. It's the seemingly positive image of the Roma as free, roaming around, and it's not being burdened by the various pressures of modernity, land ownership, work routines. So that creates a romantic image, and the people studying Roma are often fascinated precisely by that. The inverse of that is they are seen precisely as not bound to the conventions and norms of society and are ultimately criminal by definition. And then it's really also nationalism, where even if you have lived in one place for generations, if you are not associated with the dominant ethnic group who is supposed to make up the nation, you're still understood to be somewhat rootless in some much more metaphorical ways, even if you technically did not move.
Since at least the 18th century, European empires had placed Roma under surveillance, trying either to expel or to assimilate them. But it's important to remember that the romanticised stereotype of the wandering gypsy didn't reflect the reality of Romani people's lives.
Before 1933, there's a wide variety of different ways of life and different economic roles carried out by Roma across Europe. Many of them are settled in villages, very much part of local communities, usually rural communities. Even those who traveled would have a home in the winter in a town. They would trade in horses, sharpen knives, make and sell baskets. By the late 19th century, there develops a panic across Europe about the presence of these people and the notion of a, in inverted commas, the notion of a gypsy nuisance or a gypsy menace came onto the agenda of many of the European states.
Such panics about the notion of a gypsy menace were joined by new pseudosciences of eugenics or criminal biology. After the Nazis came to power in Germany in 1933, camps for gypsies were established on the outskirts of German cities, and Roma were subject to the same racial laws as Jews, including restrictions on marriage and selection for compulsory sterilisation. But few, if any, voices were ever raised about this worsening persecution of Romani populations.
It's very easy to understand how boycotting Jewish stores on April 1st, 1933 is a revolutionary act. It's meant to be a revolutionary act. The Romani genocide is a normalized form of persecution turned lethal and genocidal. Highly over-policed populations where particular decisions of a regime transforms what is an everyday racism and over-policing into suddenly something lethal.
What did it take to move the new Nazi state from persecution to mass murder? Carola Fings.
The first and very important step was to declare all Sinti and Roma as a foreign race according to the Nuremberg laws. This then also triggered the racial registration of Sinti and Roma in Germany, and it was aimed to achieve a total registration of everyone.
With the Nazi takeover, two things happened. The first is the end of the rule of law. And the second dimension is, of course, the aspect of Nazi racism. Under the Nuremberg laws, Roma were declared to be of alien blood, like the Jews, and therefore excluded from the rights of citizenship. And that then marks the beginning of a process which allows for physical annihilation.
We've come to the Federal Archives in Berlin, where the files of the Race, Hygiene and Population Policy Research Unit are held. This was a unit that was set up in 1936 by a doctor and psychiatrist called Robert Ritter, who collected a huge amount of physical and genealogical information about Roma and Sinti living in Germany. After studying medicine and psychiatry, Ritter's research had begun to focus on theories of criminal biology and eugenics, and he began in the middle of the 1930s to apply this research to so-called gypsies.
Well, I think Robert Ritter was very eager to make a career, knew quite well that with this racial hygiene, he can place himself within the German bureaucracy and that he will be backed in all the things he's going to undertake by the regime. And he knew what the regime wants him to do. He wanted to provide all necessary data to the criminal police.
This is one of the most extensive archives, particularly the efforts almost obsessively to trace the roots of families going back for centuries. The first file that I'm opening contains a pile of family trees, and the one I'm holding now has about 8 large pages of paper glued together. When I unfold it on the table, it's about 3 meters long. This family's history goes back to the early 19th century.
The racial hygiene unit, they pretended to be very friendly. They even spoke some words of Romanes, but their aim was to get all information about all persons and to register them. And this racial registration was the first step for the deportation and murder.
Just to give you a quick sense of the other materials in here, we have hundreds and hundreds of small cards on which we have black and white photos, typically taken in profile and head-on. It's chilling, the expressions on people's faces. Some of them are clearly terrified. The people behind the camera are the police, and this is clearly a situation where people are having their photographs taken against their will. They're imprisoned by this point. And of course, the moment at which this photo is taken is just one small snapshot of a much longer history of persecution. These are people that have been used to living under surveillance their entire lives.
Combating the Gypsy Plague, December the 8th, 1938. Heinrich Himmler. The treatment of the gypsy question is part of the National Socialist task of national regeneration. The aim of measures taken by the state to defend the homogeneity of the German nation must be the physical separation of gypsydom from the German nation, the prevention of miscegenation, and finally, the regulation of the way of life of pure and part gypsy. The necessary legal foundation can only be created through a gypsy law, which prevents further intermingling of blood. and which regulates all the most pressing questions which go together with the existence of gypsies in the living space of the German nation.
Hormany Rosa was born a year after the war's end and has been the chairman for the Central Council of German Sinti and Roma for the past 42 years. He lost many family members in the Holocaust.
Die Nationalsozialisten hatten eigentlich kein Kriterium.
The National Socialists actually had no criteria for identifying the minority with its 600-year history. This is why genealogies were produced, family trees that went back to the 16th century. And these genealogies were only possible because of the support of the Catholic and Protestant churches, which opened their church registers, certificates of marriage or baptism.
Kirchenbücher offengelegt haben, also Eheschließungen, Taufscheine. Der Wille der Nazis ging im Falle unserer.
The will of the Nazis went so far that even someone who was an eighth of a gypsy, if one great-grandparent out of eight was a member of our minority, they were classified as racially inferior on the certificates issued by the Race Hygiene Institute and recommended for evacuation. Evacuation was the code name for the extermination program.
War die Tarnbezeichnung für das Vernichtungsprogramm.
When Germany started the war on 1st September 1939, there were plans to deport first all Jews, but also all Sinti and Roma to the then occupied Poland. And this was a very decisive step towards the genocide. Himmler always said Jews first and then the Sinti and Roma. And this happened, in fact, when nearly all German Jews had been deported. Then they started to deport also all Sinti and Roma to Auschwitz-Birkenau.
What Nazi occupation or the presence of the Nazi allies or the wartime situation does is to license other countries to immobilize, in turn, deport and or murder their own Roma populations, often with different pace and with slightly different rationales, always on the basis that Roma are not only ethnically, culturally, racially different, but dangerous, criminal, antisocial.
By the time when the German Sinti were deported, already nearly all Roma, for example, in Estonia had been killed. In 1941-1942, hundreds, thousands of Roma had been killed already in the ally state Croatia and, of course, in German-occupied Serbia. In Germany, it took longer because I think the regime had to ask themselves whether they could dare to kill these German citizens.
Even before 1942, when SS chief Heinrich Himmler called for the deportation of all Roma and Sinti to Auschwitz, local authorities under Nazi occupation had been engaging in their own lethal practices. Take, for example, Leti, a concentration camp for gypsies established in August 1942 in the Nazi protectorate of Bohemia and Moravia, today's Czech Republic. Well over 1,000 people from all over the protectorate were incarcerated here until the camp was closed down in 1943. Hundreds died of hunger and typhus. The inmates were forced to work in nearby farms and quarries, but this was not a labour camp. Romani children were imprisoned here as well as adults. The camp was run by Czech gendarmes. Prisoners were rounded up using registers compiled by the Czech police, who'd been collecting data on Roma for many years before the Nazi occupation. Božena Ružičková was 18 when she and her fiancé were deported to Leti, where she was forced to work in a quarry before she managed to escape from the camp. Her interview is in the archives in the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum.
Well, I'd say the worst was the food there and the beating, and that we had to work like horses and didn't get any proper food for it. And then they'd still scream at you, get working, get working. And if you couldn't work anymore, then they'd beat you. So you just had to force yourself to work somehow.
Božena Flegorová, a Czech Romani woman, was 21 when she was imprisoned in the Leti camp, along with her one-year-old son. In later years,
she would write a memoir about her experiences of Leti.
The children died, very often of typhus and dysentery. There was not a day that went by that they did not carry out a few dead bodies, which they piled up by the well and covered with blankets, where they waited to be taken to the forest, to the gypsy cemetery. It was a cruel moment when we saw that pile of corpses. My daughter, who was born there on the 2nd of September 1942 and died of hunger on the 2nd of December 1942, allegedly of gastritis, was not even given a number. I still see in front of me how many corpses were piled up by the well, where we went to get water. How many of them are buried in the woods below the camp like cattle? Weren't they also people made of flesh and blood?
Across Europe, Roma were stripped of their rights, interned in camps and ghettos, selected for forced labour, or targeted for deportation or mass executions. Those who could resisted. They ran, hid, or even fought back by joining local partisans. But they always faced the hostility of local authorities. In France, thousands of Roma were interned in camps based on lists kept by the French police since the early 20th century. German military and SS police units shot at least 30,000 Roma in the Baltic states and elsewhere in the occupied Soviet Union. In fascist Croatia, thousands died in the Jasenovac concentration camp. The Romanian authorities expelled some 26,000 Roma citizens to Transnistria in southwestern Ukraine, then under Romanian control. Among them was Margareta Dordan. In the winter of 1942, Margareta secretly travelled to Odessa, where she submitted this desperate petition to the governor of Transnistria.
The undersigned Margareta Dordan, 5 children, widow for 1 year and 6 months. My husband has fallen wounded by a shell splinter on the battlefield, and we are now without any help. And at some point, we have been brought to Transnistria, and we have sold everything good that we had. We are now starving and dying from cold here in the village of Kovalivka, district of Osiakov. And I've come to you, Mr. Governor, with the request and with tears in my eyes, because I couldn't stand the cold and the hunger.
This is the documentary for the BBC World Service. This is the Romani Holocaust, an unfinished history. I'm historian Celia Donnet. After the defeat of Nazi Germany, thousands of Romani survivors made their way home to an uncertain future.
My sister and I were the only ones who had survived. I could no longer find my parents' house. The people there had even divided up the woods and the vineyard, as no one thought we would ever come back.
Hermione Horvath, a Romani woman from the Austrian Burgenland, was 20 years old when the war ended.
My entire possessions comprised a casserole dish and a spoon, and the courage to start a new life.
In 1946, another Romani survivor, the novelist and poet Matteo Maximoff, published an impassioned plea for justice.
There is a proverb in our language which says, "Vengeance is a right." We, the Roma, the freest people in the world, we demand that the Roma martyrs of Auschwitz be avenged, not by the fury of barbarism, but by the hand of justice. Shall we, Roma, one asks, ever have an allied court of justice which will demand the punishment of these monsters? Since the United Nations desire to do justice to all the peoples who fought for the freedom of the world, why do they not consider justice for us also?
The Polish Jewish lawyer Raphael Lemkin coined a new word to describe the sheer scale of racially motivated murder committed by the Nazi regime. Genocide.
After he coins it, the term gets introduced for the first time in the Nuremberg trials in the indictment.
Ari Juskovits, author of Reign of Ash, a new study of the entangled fates of Roma and Jews.
He defines three groups who are typical victims of genocide: Jews, Poles, and Gypsies. And we can see how he feels about the Romani genocide in correspondence he actually has. He tries to write to various institutions to figure out what happened to Roma. And we can see he's failing. He's getting minimal information. There was a concept. There was an understanding that something had happened. But what did not exist was documentation. And without the documentation, you really have very little. What you end up with is a blank page. And in that sense, it is this paradox of a forgotten genocide. And if you use the word forgotten genocide, you already know it's forgotten. You're aware of it. It's not actually fully forgotten, but it is also not there.
In the late 1940s, Jewish survivors who'd suffered alongside Roma in the Nazi camps were among the first to testify about the fate of the Roma, whilst a handful of historians began to gather evidence and testimony.
I use the word entangled for their history because they are linked together in many different ways. During the Holocaust, they largely will suffer next to each other, but not necessarily with each other. And then after the war, their efforts to document what happened to them and to seek justice really connects their two fates. So what happens after 1945 really is that there are various Jewish individuals who really start documenting, recording interviews with early recording devices or having people type out testimonies. To the first institutions really by the late 1950s and the 1960s that start to interview individual Roma. These are not big efforts by any means. What exists of early documentation of the Romani genocide, in particular of the voices of Roma, very often comes out of these Jewish institutions, Jewish survivors, and these networks, which are then essential, really, for documenting what happened.
I'm Barbara Warnock from the Wiener Holocaust Library, the world's oldest and Britain's largest archive of material on the Nazi era and the Holocaust. There was a conscious effort on the part of the Wiener Holocaust Library to gather eyewitness accounts that related to the experiences of Romani survivors themselves.
And can you tell us something about the researchers who were working for the library?
They were predominantly Jewish refugees from Nazism from Germany and Austria. Our researcher in Vienna reached out to a number of Romani survivors and interviewed them. On this very fragile paper is the account of Hermina Horvath, and she's referred to in the document as a gypsy. She was a Sinti, that is a German-speaking woman living in Austria in Burgenland. At the time that this testimony was taken in 1958, she was in her early 30s. She recounts in her testimony the restrictions they encountered on their freedom, and she also recounts things like being forced to go and work for an SS family and the attempts of an SS officer to sexually assault her, essentially, in her response to that. And she later recounts her experiences in Auschwitz-Birkenau, where she lost most of her family and also witnessed horrific incidents. It's a really striking account.
Wiener Library report. We soon found the house, which was number 186. We knocked at Frau Horvath's door, which completely surprised her. A young lady is standing in the kitchen, short brown boots, skiing trousers, and a multicoloured headcloth tied together under her chin. The face and the eyes give the impression of a young person. It simply cannot be true that this lady went through the hell of Auschwitz. Yet it is so. Frau Horvath is uncertain what to do when we so suddenly asked to go into her past life. One can see how many questions are racing through her mind. If she chooses to say nothing, we will have come in vain. She demands evidence of our ID, which we are happy to show her, and soon the ice of mistrust melts into warm, mutual understanding. Because her most heartfelt wish is that what happened in Auschwitz-Birkenau will never be forgotten. We now try to convey what Frau Horvath related to us. This is what she said.
Then they tattooed us. The children on their feet, the adults on their left hands. My number is Z7028. All our hair was shorn. We had to undress. We were smeared with an oily liquid. And then we had to go into a bath. We couldn't wash either ourselves or our clothes. And soon this was obvious to anyone looking at us. Anyway, the Germans made sure we were given the worst jobs to do. My sister was then 7 years old, but she had to carry heavy bricks. As we all had to work, my little three-year-old brother was left to his own devices. He did not survive the gypsy camp in Auschwitz-Birkenau. It was not just hunger which killed the children. We often had to stand outside for hours in all weathers, in rain and snow, in the cold and wind, barely alive, the children alongside us. They died like flies. All of us gypsies were meant to be exterminated. They tormented us. Often we had to hop for hours on end and lie down in the dirt. I also recall an SS officer who often took two gypsy children as they were very talented and could dance well. Later, he shot those two children himself. The railway tracks went directly past our block to the crematorium. The stink of burned human flesh prevailed for a long time in the air. I could hear terrible screams. They were throwing people who were still alive into the flames. Since this time, I suffer from epileptic seizures.
It does note on the cover sheet of this report that Mrs. Horvath died on March the 10th, 1958, 33 years old. Mm. She had suffered horrific conditions, forced medical experimentation, and so it's thought that she died, at least partly as a result of the privations and suffering that she'd endured under the Nazis.
Across Europe, Romani communities continue to face widespread institutionalised discrimination and hostility. Some turn to the courts for redress and compensation. All too often, their claims were dismissed. In 1952, 37 Roma and Sinti survivors of the Lachenbach camp signed a petition to the Austrian authorities. The so-called Zigeunerlager Lachenbach was the biggest of its kind in the Reich, with over 4,000 prisoners. After the war, the Austrian authorities ruled that Lachenbach had not been a concentration camp. This meant that Roma who'd been imprisoned in the camp were not eligible for the compensation awarded to concentration camp survivors.
We, former gypsy prisoners of the Lachenbach camp, are obliged to take a stand against the ruling that Lachenbach should not be recognised as a concentration camp. We want to prove that Lachenbach wasn't any different from the other concentration camps. Most of us were deported to concentration camps like Dachau, Buchenwald, Mauthausen, Ravensbrück. The rest, including women and children, were held in Lachenbach. In November 1941, the first and biggest transport went from Lachenbach to Litzmannstadt, with 4,000 people destined for death, never to return. There were heart-rending scenes as families were harshly separated and never saw each other again.
People were confronted with their perpetrators. For example, when they applied for compensation or restitution, all of a sudden the perpetrators were evaluating their claims regarding deportation to the concentration camps.
Romani Rose, chairman of the German Central Council of Sinti and Roma.
We experienced the scars, the wounds of our parents. We had to watch as the police carried out indiscriminate raids with dogs, with machine guns.
Mit Schäferhunden, mit Maschinengewehren betrieben worden sind, nur auf der Grundlage der Abstammung.
Only because of our origins. For example, Sinti and Roma were not allowed on campsites. An old SS man who was in Auschwitz or Majdanek or Treblinka, he could holiday with his wife and family on a campsite, but the victims, they were turned away and from the restaurants.
When they started to testify about what happened to them when there are criminal trials, on the one hand, the state might seek them out as witnesses for what happened to them and treat them as victims. But on the other hand, when the state looks for these witnesses, they will still work with a criminal police system that is still surveying Roma, that still has so-called gypsy experts. And I find it so useful to think about that because we so clearly understand that on the one hand, anti-Semitism doesn't go away after 1945, but we also understand that West German police would never have somebody on their force called the Jew expert after 1945. But that does exist for Roma. And that does fundamentally change how you perceive persecution and how you experience persecution. They really see a greater continuity in what happens to them.
As well as pursuing justice through the courts, Romani survivors and their descendants also had more private forms of remembrance and commemoration. One example was the lament,
Auschwitzarte, Hike Baro, which was sung within Romani communities from the late 1940s. This field recording of Ružena Danielova aired on Czech state radio in 1957. She survived Auschwitz and returned to Czechoslovakia. Her husband and five children were all killed.
Auschwitzate, Hikerbaro.
The song Auschwitzate, Hikerbaro, there is a large building in Auschwitz, that alone tells us that the song, or at least the text, was composed in Auschwitz, in the camp.
Petra Gelbart, Romani ethnomusicologist.
It was sung by various people in the camp, already in various versions that they brought back with them. Those very few who survived. It was a form of self-expression. It was a form of remembering what had happened and really telling these other people. And what's important is the text. And the text, you know, depending on who is singing it, you might hear two verses, three verses, but there are as many as eight, nine verses altogether. And they're both metaphorical. For example, oh, you little blackbird, take my letter to my wife. And the blackbird stands for death. And they're also highly specific. So talking about hunger, we don't even get a bite of bread to eat, talking about beatings, talking about the labor, and then also talking in a culturally appropriate and sensitive way, so not overtly, but referencing rape in the camp. I do know that the default attitude among post-war Czech Roma and Sinti was to preferably just not talk to people at all about being Romani, and, you know, to not open themselves up to any more danger. There was a lot of paranoia, but it's not really paranoia when their families had just been exterminated. So I do think it was something of a brave act for anyone to sing this song, knowing that it was being recorded and knowing that it was going to be associated with her. I imagine personally that there may have been some kind of impetus to speak out to the world.
The experience of the Holocaust also laid the foundations for new Romani political movements. In West Germany, Holocaust memory underpinned the founding of a Sinti and Roma civil rights movement from the 1970s. Romani Rosa.
Da gab es zum Beispiel schon sehr früh, 1979.
Very early on, 1979, there was a memorial service in the former concentration camp Bergen-Belsen, and the president of the European Parliament, Simone Weil, who was Jewish and herself a Holocaust survivor, came to this commemoration to remember the 500,000 Sinti and Roma in Nazi-occupied Europe.
Und sie hat einen sehr
and she said something very important. She said, in the presence of 1,500, 2,000 people, members of our minority, also important figures in German politics, she said, the ashes of those murdered in the concentration camps and the extermination camps of Jews, Sinti and Roma cannot be separated from each other.
Von Juden, Sinti und Roma kann man nicht voneinander.
In 1981, a group of German Sinti, among them Romani Rosa, occupied a building at the University of Tübingen after discovering the files of Robert Ritter, the Nazi racial scientist, were being stored there.
Wir wussten, dass die Täter nach dem Krieg mit diesem Material aus der rassenhygienischen...
We knew that after the war, the perpetrators had still been working with this material from the Racial Hygiene Research Institute and the Reich Main Security Office. With great secrecy, we prepared an occupation of the university. It was in 1981, And after the university administration realized that it was a scandal,
gespürt hat, dass das ein Skandal ist,
they telephoned the interior ministry in Bonn, and then they opened the door. And we entered this room, and there were thousands of pictures, also of the survivors, and our people who had survived Auschwitz, who had gone to Auschwitz with their parents. They found their own pictures. They found pictures of their parents, of their fathers. They were on the verge of breaking down when they saw this material.
Even in communist Eastern Europe, where some of the largest Romani communities lived after the war, survivors were among the founders of Romani political movements. Out of this has come the Czech Museum of Romani Culture, which was established after the collapse of communism in 1989. Its director, Jana Hovatova, is from a family of Holocaust survivors who were already campaigning for Roma civil rights during communist rule, in the face of severe and ongoing discrimination.
As a child, I didn't quite understand why at every family celebration, great joy, singing and dancing, always turned into the singing of sad songs. That ended with collective crying, elders of the family, and sometimes even an argument. When the family couldn't agree on how everything happened during the war and why someone survived and someone didn't. And it was a terrible time because my grandfather was very famous and I ashamed of my name, of my appearance, because I was black. Nobody was black. I have to go each vacancies to pioneer camp. I didn't like it. All children asked me, where are you from? Egypt, India. What could I say that I am Zigeuner? It was very, very hard time for me.
The museum has played a key role in campaigning for a memorial at the Leti concentration camp. In the 1970s, the communist government of Czechoslovakia allowed a pig farm to be built on the site. After 1989, Romani survivors and activists began campaigning to have the pig farm removed.
Thank you for being here. It is very important for us that you are here at this place of shame for the Czech state, a place of shame for all of Europe.
It is being defended, and the word is defended, by the government, the Czech government.
The protests came at a time of increased violence directed against Roma communities in post-communist Europe. Romani scholar Renata Berkiova has been one of those pushing for the Czech state to officially recognize Leti as a memorial site.
I feel that I can open the door for other Romani scholars. It's really necessary to research our own history by our own perspective and experiences. My first visit at Leti was when the pig farm was still operating and smelling. I never forget words Čenik Růžička. Čenik Růžička, descendant of Romani parents that survived, he told about his experience when he came to the gate of the pig farm. The first time he said that it was then that he realized what a Roma like him actually means to Czech society. I understood his words as Roma were perceived, their history and faith is nothing for Czech society because they are not perceived as a part of the Czech society. To know how hard it is to fight for their dignity and fight for the place of racial persecution of the Roma and Sinti in Czech collective memory.
More than 30 years after the collapse of communism, the Czech government finally removed the pig farm. And in May 2024, the Czech president, Petr Pavel, spoke at the new memorial, which is run by the Museum of Romani Culture.
The existence of a Nazi regime's Romani victims was neglected by Czech society for a long time, including as a result of the approach taken by the communist regime. Instead of building a dignified remembrance site, that regime built an industrial pig farm. and by doing so, made their position clear towards the human tragedies which transpired here. Today, we are opening a memorial here that is not just any other remembrance site, as its ambition is to remind the public, in detail, of the grim history of the local camps and the suffering of specific human beings brought by the Holocaust of Sinti and Roma in Bohemia. It will remind us that it is necessary to protect basic human values always and for everybody without exception. Thank you.
These Romani civil rights movements are also rewriting the history of the Romani Holocaust to foreground the voices of the victims as well as the actions of perpetrators. Carola Fings.
It was very important to change the perspective, to take a closer look on what the survivors or those who were affected by persecution, and of course most of them did not survive, so what they wrote, what they said, what their legacy is. Because this also changes the perspective we have on the persecution. It broadens our view, and of course, it shows the people affected by persecution, how they react and how they act. They are not passive victims. But I think the most important aspect here is that we overcome the distorted images that the perpetrators laid on them.
But European Roma still face racism and widespread institutionalized discrimination. Romani Rosa.
Demokratie und Rechtsstaatlichkeit ist Kultur.
Democracy and the rule of law are culture. You have to earn them. I believe that the Federal Republic today is a democracy governed by the rule of law. When the right had a meeting in the Villa Adlon, the AfD and the nationalists who dream about a rebirth of the Third Reich and have these ideas about remigration, which really means deportation of a million people, including those with a German passport. Because for these people, being German is only about blood and soil. This, of course, made it very clear that democracy is not carved in granite, but it has to be defended.
Nicht in Granit gemeißelt ist, sondern dass Demokratie verteidigt.
The survivors of the Roma genocide always spoke out, but for so long, no one wanted to listen. This is a history that makes us pause and think again about the murderous violence of the 20th century, not as an aberration, but as something that could always reappear in our world today, at any time.
It's not healthy. It's just not healthy to go through your entire life having to hide who you are because of the stigma, and also because you're likely to be met with either just derision or just complete misunderstanding.
For the first time ever, at the United Nations Holocaust Memorial Day, Petra Galbert sang Auschwitz Arte Hike Baro in January 2024.
It meant a lot, not because I have any great desire to be on stage or whatever, but because I have been involved in these United Nations yearly commemorations that they have since 2009, and there was not a single mention of Romani or Sinti victims, not one word, nothing. There was never a person invited to speak, but what was special about this year was that there was both a Romani speaker and a Romani musician who were given the space to represent our losses and our people. Auschwitz te bare boca, te sote halamename, ani oda kotormaro, heblokaris, bibachta alo.
You've been listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service. This has been The Romani Holocaust, an unfinished history. Presented by me, Celia Donnet. The producer was Mark Berman. The readers were Lucy Ash, Hannah Berman, Johannes Dell, Kate Dobson, Carl Prekop, and Monica Whitlock.
This has been a Whistledown production for the BBC World Service.